My name is Catherine Ford. I'm a psychiatrist. I practice and teach relationships of all kinds, but in particular couples. My website is CatherineFordMD.com, and you can find me in the same way on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, Catherine Ford MD.
Talking this morning with Dr. Catherine Ford about relationships, tell me why aperture? Isn't that a photography term?
Yes, aperture most people know as a photography term. I'm a therapist, and I started working exclusively with couples about 20 years ago. And a few years into that, one day I hit upon the idea while working with someone of talking to them about their openness and use the word aperture, your emotional aperture to each other. And it worked so well that I just stuck with it and went further in that direction. And what I began to realize is that couples can get very confused by the complexity of relationships. And keeping your eye on the ball, or sometimes I say aperture is the North Star, and if you follow it, you won't go off course. What that means is that what couples most want when they're interacting is for the other person to be open to them, to hear them, to understand them. And the key to that is whether or not the other person is open. It matters a lot less how well you articulate what it is you're trying to say than whether or not the other person is truly open to listening. And so keeping an eye on whether or not you're open as you're speaking and your partner's open as they're listening is really the key to whether or not you're going to connect well, solve problems well, understand each other.
What about love? What's love got to do with it?
You know, wouldn't we all like to know? Love is a term that always comes up in regards to couples. And love is a very complicated thing that you could come at from several different points of view. I would say that open apertures is an aspect of people loving each other. It certainly is an aspect of them being open to having feelings about each other. And then what those feelings are, some of them are love and some of them are other complicated feelings, all of which make up couples' relationships. And most people, when they talk about, do you love me? What they mean is, do you consider my well-being, my experience, kind of in the same plane as yours? And that relates to what I talk to couples about in terms of really using as a guideline, in addition to aperture, the idea that number one priority is the relationship is a good thing to follow. And generally what that means is when we sit down to solve a problem, we both own each agenda. In other words, I'm looking after my particular slant on things, like let's say maybe I want to take a vacation this week, and I might be talking to my partner and he might be saying, well, this week is a bad week for me because I really have a workshop to do and it's not a good week for you to be gone. And so as we work that out, he needs to keep an eye on that it matters to me to get a vacation. I need to keep an eye on what matters to him. And I would say that's pretty close to what I think of as love.
Do you get a sense after doing this for what, 20 years or so, do you get a sense for the couples who are going to work and those who aren't, or can you often be surprised?
Say a little bit more about what you mean by do I get a sense of them. There's something you mean by that.
Okay. Do you know what couples are going to go the distance with your therapy and stay together is, I guess, what I mean.
How can you tell if they're going to make it?
Yes.
That is the question, isn't it? That's what everybody wants to know. My personal guideline for that is that I think that it's important that couples be interested in learning and that they be similar in their interest in learning. What I see is that the difference between couples that are thriving and couples that are struggling is whether or not they know how to turn their problems into learning. And many people and many couples think that they have problems because there's something wrong with their couple. Either they're mismatched or there's something wrong with one of them. But actually, couples have problems because being a couple is a path to growth and adult development. And that is a difficult proposition and involves a lot of twists and kinks along the way. And the difference between viewing those problems as something wrong with somebody versus viewing them as this is the thing that points us in the direction of what we need to learn, that's the difference between couples that are going to make it and couples that aren't. A different answer to that, I would say, is John Gottman's research. John Gottman is an unusual character in the field of couples work in that he's done research on some elements of what helps couples stay together. And he defines certain things like contempt as definitely a harbinger of serious difficulty. But I would say it's about learning, and a couple needs to think about, are they open to learning? And if they are, then a whole lot of what troubles them can become actually what brings them together.
You know, just hearing the word contempt, this is a side issue here, but just hearing contempt just makes my blood run cold. I mean, can you come back from that if the other part of the couple is contemptuous of you?
Yes, contempt can happen as a relationship deteriorates. Relationships, like a lot of things in life, have upward spirals and downward spirals, or virtuous cycles and vicious cycles. And there's a big difference between a couple that's in a virtuous spiral and a vicious spiral. And I would say contempt is what happens as you're seriously going down in a downward spiral. And yes, you can come back from that. It takes a lot of work to turn the spiral around. And one key for couples to know about is that the work of turning the spiral around is different than what you do once you get it turned around. It's very similar to in physics. We say that it takes a lot more energy in a system to change the direction of a force than to simply continue in the direction of the force. Mm. And the same is true with couples. Once you get things going in the right direction, the work that you have to do isn't quite so hard. And if you are in a downward spiral, knowing that this is the hardest part sometimes can help people not get discouraged. If they realize that, you know, if we just pedal very hard and get over this part, then it gets easier after that. And that's part of what's involved in coming back from contempt.
Sort of sounds like getting through the rapids on a river or something.
Something like that, yeah. And what's difficult for couples is that in a certain way, it's kind of not fair that at exactly the point that couples are feeling the most exhausted, the most discouraged, they've been kind of going downward for a while, that's the place where they actually have to make sometimes kind of a heroic effort to meet each other and to start to learn again and to give it all they've got. And if they think that it's always going to feel that hard, that may discourage them so much that they give up. But if they realize that just around the corner is something that's still going to be about learning, but it's going to be a lot easier, it makes that effort sit a little differently. The context is different.
How does one handle finding out about what the other partner is really like after the honeymoon phase is over with? You find out who the real person is. And I'm not just talking about underwear on the floor, but...
Right. All of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yes.
That really is about the importance of listening. And listening is so important everywhere in life, but especially between couples. Listening and truly being interested and realizing that human beings are kind of amazingly the same and amazingly unique all at the same time. And so we can assume that because so much is the same, we can anticipate what the other person is thinking and feeling and know them in a simple kind of way. But even couples that have been together for decades, the ones that are still having a good time with each other will emphasize that there are still surprises. And then, of course, there's the fact that we're constantly changing. Human beings are really amazingly well designed for learning and change. And so the partner that you have one day, a year or two later, is not actually the same person. And I would say staying current with your partner's changes is also a part of the after the honeymoon. That somebody was asking me the other day, how do you stay connected through all these changes that you go through as a couple? And my answer was quite simply, you spend time making sure that you're sharing that process. I have one couple where one of them is about to go through a pretty intensive developmental process in a graduate course they're going to take, and they're going to be separated geographically for that. And I was emphasizing to them, it's going to be awfully important that you spend time talking to each other about your parallel journeys of development as this year unfolds. So continuing to be interested and listen to who are you and who are you after this big experience that you've just had? And part of who you are is who you want to be. Tell me about that. That's how that happens.
On your website, you talked about the dichotomy of I can't read your mind versus versus there should be sometimes when you understand me without me speaking.
Yeah, both of those are true. People that go too far in the direct, you can go too far in the direction of wanting your partner to read your mind. We all kind of want some of that because when another person anticipates accurately or guesses accurately at what we want, we do feel very known and sometimes very loved by that accuracy. We all want yes. that kind of accuracy from people that care about us and especially our life partner. And on the other hand, it's very fallible. Even people that know us quite well and are taking their best guess and are caring can really miss the boat, either because you've changed or because they didn't know something about you or because they were distracted or because they had a bad night's sleep. And so the problem that can happen with wanting your partner to anticipate your needs and understand you without you speaking is that when that doesn't happen, if the meaning you make out of that is that they don't love you or they don't care enough or they're the wrong partner, that would be a big mistake because it's also true that this ability is, you know, it's sort of like an intermittent superpower. And when it works, it's very exciting and lovely. But also the couples with whom it works the best are couples that are not afraid to communicate a lot and in fact over-communicate. And part of how you get to that place of occasionally reading each other's minds and knowing what the other person needs is through a lot of communication, both at the beginning of a relationship and also as you go along. And the more overt, explicit communication there is about how you're feeling about things, what you want, what things mean to you, the better job your partner will do occasionally at knowing you without you having to say.
I also liked on your website where you talked about being in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked me that because that is probably my favorite thing to talk about because talk about superpowers. That's really where is the aperture awareness that I teach people, which is the awareness of the openness that you have to each other in any given moment. That's a present moment skill. In other words, that's not something you figure out. That's not something you thought about last night and now you know what it is. That's something you're sensing in the moment as it's happening. It's actually a sensory perception, much like eyesight. And in the same way that you don't know what you're seeing by analyzing the visual data that's coming in and hitting your retina, you just look at something and you see what you're seeing. And it's a gestalt of a sensory perception. The same is true about our aperture awareness. It's something we sense in the moment. It's a felt sensation in the moment. And the important thing is to know that that's possible. Our brains are very well designed for what I call aperture awareness. It's a limbic system function that's extremely powerful. And human beings and mammals in general, in fact, are very, very well equipped to read the openness of the other person, or in some cases, your dog can tell how open you are. So that's an in-the-moment perception. It's not something you figure out. And in fact, thinking about it can get in the way. You need to tune into, am I open right now to you? Do I feel that you're open right now to me? If you wonder, do you have aperture awareness and where it is and how do you get it? Just ask yourself, how open do I feel right now? How open do I feel as I'm listening to this interview? Mm-hmm. How open do I feel as I go out my door in the morning? And tune into that sense of I'm open or I'm hesitant, I'm a little closed. And the more you pay attention to it, like any of our perceptions, the more developed it will be.
So when you're talking about being in the moment and the mindfulness of that, you're not
yes.
you're not just talking about you always leave the toilet seat up and it escalates from there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're talking about just letting go and paying attention to what's happening right in front of you now.
Yes, exactly. For instance, you walk in, you see the toilet seat up and you don't like that. Paying attention to the fact that you're extremely closed at the moment you see that, might inform you to know that if you speak about that at that moment, it's likely to go poorly. Because when we speak to each other from a closed aperture, it's very unlikely to be successful. Our partner is going to pick up on the closed aperture, and the strongest impetus to close aperture is our partner's aperture being closed. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they hear that tone in your voice, they're not only not open to reforming their toilet seat behavior, they kind of don't want to see you for an hour or two.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I think I'll drive around the block. And so that moment of aperture awareness tells you, yes, this is important to me, and no, this is not a good time to speak about it. I'll look for a better time and talk about it later. And that sense of timing of when do you talk about the tricky things is very meaningful and very helpful to couples.
I suppose it's staying in the moment to know when the time might be right to broach a touchy subject.
Yes. The time that's right is, first of all, when two apertures are open. And in general, for touchy subjects, I try to counsel my couples toward the idea of pretty much not bringing up the problems and the complaint on the fly. Spontaneous complaining can create, if there's too much of it, an atmosphere of unease and a sense of unsafety, like you don't know when you're going to get sideswiped by your partner's disapproval. That doesn't feel very good, and it doesn't allow people to kind of relax and just enjoy their environment together. So it's not that you want to not pay attention to the things that may be irritating you or problematic in the relationship. In fact, you do want to pay attention to it. But what you want to be able to do is choose a time to talk about that and have some consensus about that. So you might go to your partner and say, there's something that I've been meaning to talk to you about concerning how we deal with the toilet seat. I know that's a tricky topic. When do you think would be a good time? And that gives your partner a chance to know, oh, I don't have to deal with this on the fly, because if your partner's going to have a negative reaction, it's going to be a stronger negative reaction if they're surprised. So yep. At the moment you say, we need to talk about the toilet seat, there's a bit of a jolt and a bit of a surprise and a bit of aperture closure, right?
Yeah, I got that.
And so what you want to do is reassure them, look, we don't have to talk about this right now. And as soon as you say that, their aperture is probably going to start to relax and open. Let's pick a time that's good for both of us. How about next Sunday afternoon? And then you can both sit down knowing that you're going to have this talk, but you both kind of agreed to it. And of course, buy-in is very important. And then you have a better shot at having a talk with open apertures that's more likely to allow you to emphasize collaboration, consensus, and things that will help the relationship.
I have to ask how you got into this line of work. Was it a calling for you, something that you always thought you would spend your life doing, or how did it come about?
Yeah, I think it probably was. The door that I got into it through was an interest in psychology. When I went away to college, I decided to study psychology, knowing that I probably, like every other college freshman, was going to change my major 50 times. Yeah. But in fact, I didn't. I found the subject matter very fascinating and congenial to me. I liked trying to figure out what was going on with myself and other people at that level. I remember when my youngest daughter was two or three, just barely articulating things, maybe 3 years old. She said to me one night as I was brushing her hair, she said, you know what I think is the most interesting thing in the world? And I said, no, what? And she said, what other people are thinking.
Wow.
I thought, there it is, a natural psychologist.
Yes.
And I thought, yeah, me too. I was very interested in what other people were thinking and doing and feeling. And from there, I kind of went through a different doorway, which was psychiatry. And that had to do with realizing that a lot of psychology at that point did not include enough of the physiology and the brain science. And I really wanted to know that. So I proceeded to go to medical school and became a psychiatrist instead of a psychologist, although still what I practice, I would say, is more psychology than psychiatry. And then the couples part, really, which is really what I feel is my true calling, at a point about 20 years ago, I realized that the thing that I enjoyed the most was talking to couples. And I also was starting to realize that when I was seeing an individual, I didn't feel that the whole picture was in the room. And I started experimenting with when I would, mostly I was doing individual psychiatry, as most psychiatrists do. And I started experimenting with bringing in their partner early in the process, like after a couple of sessions, I would ask to meet the partner, not to include them in the treatment, simply to know them. And after I did that for a few times, I realized how enriched my understanding was of what was going on just by that one meeting. And pretty soon I started turning the corner towards realizing that as human beings, we're so connected to each other, and especially when we do have a main partner, a life partner, that person is such an integral part of who we are. We really, someone said, the smallest human unit is two. And that has to do with all kinds of research that shows that actually, even in terms of our basic physiologic regulation, we regulate each other by contact, and we do much better with contact with other people. And so it started to make sense to me that I wanted to treat the smallest human unit of two, and that couples, I just felt like, were a very important part of what goes on in people's life and where people do their growing and learning. If you're in a partnership, a lot of your adult learning is going to happen there. And I felt that was really a great way to participate in people's development.
By the way, have you watched In Treatment? There's a new season now. What do you think?
Oh, yes. I think that is a fabulous show. I like that show a lot. Unlike many shows that show therapy, I think it shows a pretty realistic picture of therapy, and a pretty interesting picture, and a pretty deep picture. And I like it. I think it's great. And I think people can learn a lot from that show.
Yeah, I think so too. Dr. Ford, was there anything that you didn't get into that you would like us to talk about before we conclude?
A couple of things I'll circle back to. I noticed that you used the word mindfulness, and you correctly understood that when I'm talking about present moment awareness, that is another word for what I'm talking about. And really, a part of probably how I got to the understanding that keeping your eye on openness is the key to the whole thing, it has to do with the fact that I, in addition to my psychiatry training and being in practice, I have for many years been a student of various kinds of meditation, and especially mindfulness. And so paying attention to what's going on right here, right now, was something I had been training myself towards for quite a while, and still do. And I would say also, a good therapist, that's when they're in the room with someone, that's what they're really doing. In addition to whatever else they're doing, they're paying attention to openness and the client's openness, their openness. So it's not just about couples, it's about any of our relationships have to do with this openness to each other. And yes, that's basically mindfulness applied to the couple's relationship. I guess what I would emphasize is it's an important simplification that doesn't do damage to the complexity of what's going on. In other words, all the complexity is still there, but it allows you to thread the needle in a way that doesn't require you to know about the latest model of couples relationships. It doesn't require you to analyze everything about your past or your partner's past. And in fact, I would say the two mistakes that I see couples make the most often have to do with either with, in the face of the complexity and the difficulties, shutting down and withdrawing and kind of giving up on doing anything with the complicated moments. And that's one big mistake. And the other big mistake is overthinking it. And especially today, many people, just in their travels in the world, get a lot of useful psychology. The models of psychology are very useful and very interesting. However, in the moment with your partner, as you're interacting, getting too far into the weeds of trying to figure out what's going on based on some kind of mental analysis can really lead you astray and lead you away from paying attention to, am I listening? Is my partner listening? Am I open? Are they open? Is there a possibility here for us to connect in a way that will feel nurturing and loving?
Well, that's well said. If anybody wants to find out more about Aperture and your take on all of this, what would they do? Where would they go?
They can go to my website, and listed there under events, or the click button is probably services. I often do teachings and trainings, both for couples, for therapists, and sometimes also for singles and just all comers. And in fact, I have coming up, I often teach through Stanford Continuing Studies, And I will have a class there October 2nd and 9th that will be for anyone who's interested in this approach to relationships. And I would say on my website, as I offer such things, they will be listed there, KatherineFordMD.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about all this with me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Pat.